The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 465, Better Than the Board Game. Dot, dot, dot. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers, but especially Michael Y2, our new producer, for bringing us a brand new episode. Hey, friends, welcome back. Join us at the table as we talk about, as always, the latest and greatest in tabletop gaming. Anthony, how you doing out there?
I'm doing awesome. I'm excited. This is we're coming out of the winter. We're getting into the spring. Things are happening. Games are going to happen. Conventions are coming up.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm looking at my calendar. I'm like, holy moly, I'm actually going places. I'm doing stuff. I'm so excited.
You're like a kid on Christmas. You're like, board games with people out there in the world.
I tell you what, man, this, you know, when my kids were little, we were all sick all the time. It's just a thing that happened. This is the first year in like 5 years where I'm like, why is everybody sick all the time?
You guys got a little bit of everything this year, and that's
I have not gone anywhere really since. I've managed to squeeze a few things in here and there, but I haven't really gone out and participated in the world since early December. So been almost 3 months. I'm ready to get out there.
You would not recommend these things, right?
No, viruses are bad, y'all. We should all wear masks all the time. It'd be great.
I know. Speaking of which, I was at Dreamation 2024 in Morristown, New Jersey. Our friends Vinny and Avi at the convention invited us to come down, take a look around, see a upscaled hotel in which they were holding Dreamation, their board game convention. Happens over several days this past February, right around my birthday. It always falls properly on my birthday and then that weekend. So big shout out to everyone there at Double Exposure for having a board game convention on my birthday. You guys are awesome.
I mean,
what else can I say? Thank you. Of course, every year you do this. I mean, there's a lot of love there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, Anthony, I've been there many, many years over the past 10 plus years. This year was great. And as Anthony was mentioning, tabletop gaming, awesome. Also very close quarters. And Dreamation did something great, which is if you're at the table gaming, they're requiring a mask. Now, here's the thing. It's not a political thing at all. And it's an uncomfortable thing, 100%. But it's a thing that keeps us all safe and keeps us all at the table. So I really appreciate them supporting people. Especially, we always want to get as many people to the table as possible. And over the years, we've talked about all these underrepresented, undersupported groups. One of the groups we don't talk about a lot that try to get to the table for gaming is a lot of those people who are immune compromised or have medical conditions. And the last thing in the world they need is some super contagious, you know, virus out there. So wherever you are in the world or at the table, again, I know there's a politically charged environment. There's a lot of different sciences out there, but do it for the people at the table. Make a welcoming space, you know, support them playing with us. It makes all the world a difference because over the last couple of years, they haven't been able to play and we've missed them. And they're so much a part of our hobby. So please be kind, support, even if it's not for you, it's for a lot of people out there that you may not know need that particular protection. And it's a good thing. It's about being good neighbors at the table, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. 100% agree.
So I had a really fun time there. Smirk and Dagger. Our friend Kurt was out there. Got to try out some new games. I'll be talking about upcoming soon. And got to, you know, just sit at the table. Game Master Dave was there. He taught us Trekking Through History, which was a lot of fun.
Ooh,
and just got to play a lot of cool stuff and got to see a lot of cool people. And fingers crossed, because that's what we have to do these days, and knock on all the wood. So wherever you're listening to this on a podcast or you're listening to this on YouTube, please find wood and knock on it. things are back, kind of, somewhat. Please, dear God, we want to get to the table. So, yeah. So it was fun. A lot of people, a lot of fun, a great convention. If you have not been before, please try to do so in the future. We also have some exciting news that'll be coming up in the future, which we'll talk about in a bit or a bit later. But Anthony, that's not all that's going on. There's a little project that we've been working on for quite some time. You know it. I know it. We both love it. Hopefully everyone else out there loves it. It's Board Game Academics.
Hey, y'all. It's real. It's not just a thing we talked about for a year.
We did a thing.
We did a thing. It is up. It is live as you are listening to this. Board Game Academics issue number one.
What?
Launched on March 1st. So you can head on over to boardgameacademics.com/issue-1.
Ooh. And
it is there. You go to the website, click on journal, drop down there. So we have 8 journal articles from amazing individuals from throughout academia. We have Eric Zimmerman from the NYU Game Lab. We have historians, Susan Asbury, talking about the Spanish-American War and like the games that were based on that. We have articles about escape rooms and usability within that for neurodivergent gamers. We have people talking about game use in the classroom, something that's very near and dear to my heart personally. We have a wonderful discussion of chess and the issue of sexism and how it's been handled in the chess community over the last few years, especially in the wake of The Queen's Gambit, the very popular Netflix show. We have an analysis of Warhammer 40K miniatures.
Yes.
And how they represent the space in which they live and why they are important. Like, we often wonder, like, why do I have all these miniatures? And we have this wonderful article analyzing the purpose of this physical object within this imagined space and why they're so important for that. So I encourage all of you, whether you're an academic or just like board games and listen to the podcast, check it out. These authors have put so much work into this. We've all worked with them over the past year plus, getting these articles ready for you all to read. Very, very excited to have this out there. And It's a labor of love for everybody involved, and we really hope you enjoy. And stay tuned, because the call for papers for the second issue will be going up this week. So if you are out there thinking, like, I got some research I'd like to share, well, it's probably up now or very soon to now as well.
Excellent. And again, thank you to all the writers, authors, researchers, practitioners for putting that work together and putting it out there. And especially a big thanks to our tremendous Board Gamers Anonymous audience. BGA is BGA in a lot of ways and a lot of things, but Board Game Academics, that BGA, would not be here without Board Gamers Anonymous, this BGA, and all of you at the table. Your support through social media, through visiting the websites, through just letting people know about the podcast, all your financial support through patreon.com /BGA has, again, meant the world to us. A lot of support for a lot of good people. And again, our mission is always getting more people to the table. This research does that. And that's what's really the most exciting thing, that you can actually read all of these writings from these scholars about the games that we love and either how they've impacted society or how society's impacted the games or how the games themselves can impact, you know, practical usage as far as, you know, teaching or therapy or a number of different applications out there. So check out the journal. You now have, which is really what we want to do, you now have solid research, solid scholarship that will support you getting more games to the table. And we're really excited about that. So again, thanks everybody. Check it out. And hopefully, if you can, on some level, please put something together. We would love to hear from you. We would love for you to be part of our issue number 2.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's everything that's going on with us, especially with BoardGameAcademics.com. Anthony, I don't know if you remember, but there was this man. Let's just call him Stefan Feld.
I know that guy. He's cool. I met him once.
Are you a fan of Stefan?
I am. Yeah, I'm not a fan of who he's aligned himself with in recent years to sell his games, but I think he's a very cool man by himself.
Yeah, such a cool man that you at one time had all of his things, which is illegal, probably.
I had 21 games taking up way too much space on my Kalax. I love his games. I think they're amazing. Yeah. I would play any of them. Even the ones I don't particularly like, I would sit down and play. If someone's like, you want to play a Stefan Feld game? Of course I do.
And you met him. You met Stefan Feld.
I did, yeah, back in 2019 before everything went away for a few years. at Gen Con, I got a chance to play a game slightly adjacent to him as he kind of taught the rules, and I got a picture with him, which was great.
Excellent. Yeah, so again, me too, right? I'm a big Stefan Feld fan, did not meet him, really disappointed about that. And I was such a big fan that when Queen Games announced their City Collection, I went ahead and backed all four, at least the initial all four. And again, check back on the former episodes, we talked more about this, had a variety of different opinions on it. But in general, for me, personally, it did not live up production wise, gameplay wise. I mean, thematically, just wasn't it just wasn't Stefan Feld. Like it was, but it was a pale comparison to his other games. And a lot of his other games, production wise, were not great. Because again, they were several years ago where the very like muddled and muddy kind of greens and browns and beiges was like the standard for Euro games. So we always had a dream that we would have these deluxe versions of Stefan Feld games, and we got them. The thing is, while we did get them and they are an upgrade, the rest of the industry has like, I don't know, gone to light speed. So, like, Queen Games did a better production, a solid production, but the whole industry is, like, again, a light year ahead of them now at this point. So, they need to do something with their design studio or their development production studio, because it's not at the level of everybody else. It's at the level, I don't know, maybe 5 years back, I hate to say. So, yeah. I was happy to back these. I was happy to get these. It came with a lot of just fun stuff. You got these kind of challenge coins with Feld on them. I got the ones actually had his signature on it, because clearly I'm that person who needs to have that. And it also had this numbering system. So the idea was you would back his games as the Kickstarters came, and you would keep the same number, this collector's number. You got to pick two numbers, and then they sent you a game based on that, or a number based on that. I put two numbers in. I got neither of those numbers. So I was a little like, why didn't you ask for 3 or 4 then? Because, yeah. So I got neither of the two numbers that I picked, and I was actually pretty disappointed by that. But nonetheless, I was still happy to get the games at the time before I got a chance to play them. And I had, I had aspirations of purchasing the rest of the collection because it's Stefan Feld. And then I played the four and it just didn't hit me. Again, there are previous reviews on this and I'm sure future reviews to come on this as well. And then there other games came out for the Kickstarters and the production was not there. Like the following two games was like clearly a downgrade. I don't know what financially they were dealing with as far as the cost is concerned, because it seems like they made all the money on the first four. So I don't understand why the next two were such lower production value. And like, also like now there weren't actual signatures. They were like pre-printed signatures of Stefan Feld and other stuff like that. So it's just, people were very upset and outraged by that. I did not back any of his other games after that. So as fate would have it, or as Queen Games would have it, I got an email. Greetings. We are sending you an email as a collector of the first four Stefan Feld City Collection games. First and foremost, thank you for helping us make it a success. We appreciate your support. It appears as if you have not continued your collection. Yeah. Understatement. We hate to see you go, but completely understand if you opt to stop. There's a lot of great games out there to choose from. We appreciate your support nonetheless. Should you wish to resume your collection, we would love to have you back and would be happy to make that happen. We have all your numbers reserved waiting for you. And then they obviously mentioned Kathmandu and Nassau that are on their current campaign, obviously trying to get people to kick in. What I really would love that for them to do or have done in this email was just been like, hey, we appreciate your support for the first four. It meant a lot to us. It got us off the ground. Since you have not backed any of our other games in this collection, and since you made such a big financial investment initially, clearly you were disappointed in some way with the first four. Like, I would just want some small acknowledgement. They don't have to throw his games under the bus, but some small acknowledgement of like, hey, we know you had some problems. We had some financial problems or some issues. That's why the following collection wasn't maybe up to your standards. That's why you didn't back it. But here are the reasons or thoughts based on this, or here's what we're going to do in the future, or you backed the first four games without seeing them, all four. That's crazy. Why would you do that? But you did it. So here's 10% off or something, right? None of that. It's just like, we know, but we won't say why you probably did that. But please back the other games. And I feel like it was a really missed opportunity for them to own up to some of that and also make amends with some sort of like 10 to 20% discount, just because these games are exceptionally expensive. Mm-hmm. And again, for the production and for the gameplay, exceptionally, exceptionally expensive, Anthony.
It's so much money.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And you know what? Like, I kind of see where they're coming from, right? Because these have been diminishing returns. The first collection set made raise almost $1 million. The next one was like 260,000, and then it's down to, it's like 360 and 350 or something. Like, they never really hit those highs. These aren't brass numbers. These aren't Terraforming Mars numbers. And it's because all the things we've said.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. It's been a sorry state, and I know that a lot of good people have been involved trying to make it the best games possible. And like I said, five years ago, maybe they would have been. But at this point, Stefan Feld is such a genius that it's hard to, you know, play these games now and go, but I played other games of his that were better. I played the former versions were better. That was also was very surprising. I was like, oh, I love Bruges. This new version's going to be better. Nope. And at the time of the campaigns, people did complain. They were like, hey, look, this artwork is like bland and drab and it's not good. And they changed some things, but they didn't go far enough. So again, love Stefan Feld. Queen Games puts out some great games. I just think that, you know, it's probably time to look at their design and production studios and just go, maybe we should do something here, because if you can't sell to me or Anthony, again, and I've listened to a lot of tabletops, you know, media over the years, I feel like we're like the top Stefan Feld people in the media. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's pretty definitive, like across the board. I've listened to a lot of people. I've never heard anyone, you know, lavish praise over Feld as much as we have. And if we're not backing it, I think you should really think about it. That's all I'm saying. Like, just think about it, because I'm not backing the other stuff. I'm sorry. And honestly, it breaks my heart, because I do want to. I would love to have, you know, a wall full of Stefan Feld games with like special editions and numbers on it, because clearly that's a thing. So yeah.
No, 100%. I'm with you. Like, I backed that first campaign. I was out before the second campaign, and the first one hadn't even shipped yet. The prices went up. The things they offered went down. The quality of the game looked suspect. Uh-huh. And I was like, nope, I can't keep giving you money. It was so much money the first time.
It was crazy. It really was. And I think they could have done something for the backers of the first two or the first four or both. Mm-hmm. You know, if you backed the first two, give 10% off, or you backed all four, here's 20% off, like something. Something just to acknowledge that, like, you're a part of the journey here, you're part. And again, I think because everyone has done so well on crowdfunding, I think a lot of the studios have taken advantage of that, or take it for granted. I think they've taken it for granted, right? Yeah. That, like, we can just put out whatever we want out there, and because it's from this designer, or because it's based on this IP, or especially because this is now the only place you'll ever get this, and or its expansions, you're going to back it, right? Yeah. You don't want to deal with FOMO, or you don't want to deal with never being able to get the expansions of a thing. So please, Queen Games, take a look. Look deeply inside yourself. You're a good studio. Like, do it. Just saying. Just do a thing, man. Please, dear God. Thank you. All right, well, that's everything that's happening with us out here. Anthony, let's get on to the games that we want at the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a pair of games that we saw at PAX very briefly. Did not actually get a chance to preview it, but kind of had a sense what it was, just based on the title. It's called Cascadia Rolling, and it is a pair of new flip and roll and write Cascadia games. So they have taken the Cascadia formula, which is already fairly straightforward, right? You drafting pairs of tiles and animal tokens and placing them into your tableau and then trying to meet different scoring objectives. This is one of my favorite games of all time. It's in my top 20. I absolutely love it. So they said, hey, we're making a different version of that. And I was like, cool, I'm interested. So it's up on Kickstarter right now. And what they have for you is two versions of Cascadia Rolling. There is the Rolling Hills and Rolling Rivers. And so how they've described this is it's the same basic mechanics, but they have different versions of it in these small boxes that kind of focus on different animals in different parts of the Pacific Northwest, right? So the game itself is flip and roll and write, which if you're not familiar with, is you roll a set of dice, or you flip a card or set a series of cards over, and everybody simultaneously chooses how they want to use the information on those dice or those cards, and they fill it in on their own personal player sheets. Typically these are like disposable player sheets that you fill in with a pencil, and that is exactly what you're getting in this game. So you have a tableau on the sheet of these different types of terrain and different animal tiles, and you're marking them off as the dice come up based on these different things. All these different cards represent these different potential scoring mechanisms. And so it looks like it does a good job of kind of replicating the feel of Cascadia. It is simultaneous play because it is a roll and flip and write. And it does offer some like more variability because of the number of cards that you have in these decks and the combination of the flip and the roll. Most of these games are usually flip or roll. This is both, which is an interesting kind of mishmash. I'm interested to see how that works, because the thing that makes a good roll and write or flip and write is that it's quick and intuitive, but there's emergence in the gameplay. Like, if you're just taking a potential, like, here's three options, write one on your sheet, that can get pretty boring pretty quickly. But if it emerges in such a way where you can build out a combo and kind of quickly diverge from what your opponents are doing, even based on one single decision difference, then that's where I really like a game like this, without it getting too complex. So it's a very fine balancing line of what makes a good roll and write type of game. This looks to be trying to nail that or hit that area. But again, you add those multiple mechanics. We'll see what it turns out to be. It is still designed by Randy Flynn, who designed the original Cascadia and a lot of these smaller box, simple, abstracty type games. Very good designer. Same artwork from Beth Sobel. Looks beautiful. Reminds me of home, which is all I want in a game like this. And it's relatively inexpensive. So if you're backing this on Kickstarter, it's only $19 for one of these. If you want both of them together, it's $35 and you get like a discount on shipping. You can also just do the print and play, which is always a fun thing with the roll and write type stuff. You get pay $10 and you get both of them as a print and play. Awesome. So that's the one thing I always really appreciate about flat out games is their Kickstarters are affordable. The shipping is relatively cheap. You're never like going so far in that you're like, man, I spent $100 and this game stinks. Queen Games. So in this case, it's, unless you know you don't like flip and roll and write games, which I know many people don't.
Me.
But if you like them even a little bit, if you like Calico or Cascadia or Verdant or any of those other games from Flat Out Games, this might be worth checking out. So I've already backed it. I backed it when I realized it was up on Kickstarter, which I think was earlier this week. And just, I'm happy to have more Cascadia in my life. So check it out. It's up on Kickstarter for a ridiculously long time. I think they put it up for 6 weeks. So it says 35 days left, and I think it's been up for 4 days already. So you got lots and lots of time to back this. And check it out. Cascadia, Rolling Hills and Rolling Rivers.
Okay. Well, it clearly a new version of a thing. So
it is a new version of a thing. And will it be good? I don't know.
Well, Anthony, but I have a better question for you. Is it better than the board game? See what I did there? It's yeah. It brought it back to the episode title.
Hey, you did bring it back. Yeah, I probably not, but I'm also going to have it.
No, I'm not a hater with that. I appreciate flip and roll and I don't know. What else is there? You flip and you roll and
you flip or you roll.
Okay.
Sometimes you draw.
There you go. Is there a game with flipping and rolling? Or is it
this either one.
Okay, it's this both. One. There you go.
This all one right. Has both.
Both at the same time?
It's not clear. Okay. But I haven't watched all the rules videos, so it's probably clear in there somewhere.
You're flipping your roll a thing.
Yeah, that should there's be a deck of cards and there's a handful of dice. That's all I see on the sheet. So.
And really, in the end, that's all you need to play a good game, right? Like cards and dice. Like, what are you playing? I don't know. It's just fun. I got dice.
There's there's cards. There's dice, and I have a pencil. I'm happy. It's
that's
fun.
It. That's it. It's just always. I don't hate those games. It just always hit me weird because, like, we were just talking about all the stuff on Feld Games, and I'm going to blow you away with everything else in about a second. But it was just like, wait a minute, you forgot the game inside the game. Like, you're giving me a pencil or a dry erasable marker and a couple of random dice and a deck of cards. And you're like, it's a game. And I'm just like, it's not a game. Where's the board? Where's the pieces and the figures and stuff. So yeah, no, I get it. Well, all right. On the opposite end, Anthony, of all of that shenanigan stuff, guess what, my friend? Crowdfunding. Guess what? Game found. Guess what? Castles of Burgundy, the special edition reprint.
Hey, you know what? Great for everybody who didn't get it. There better not be new content. I'm all not. Right. Come on. No. Stop it.
So it's not officially out to be backed yet. It is on GameFound, and people are following the campaign because if you know anything about GameFound, it's all about putting campaigns up way in advance and you being really excited that you could read about it or click on it or back it and realize you can't do any of those things at this moment. But let me throw out one sentence to you here that they kind of run with. The highly acclaimed special edition, one of the best board games, is coming back to GameFound. Anthony, why is it coming back to GameFound? Who kind of owns the company?
Waken Realms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This edition, hold on, Anthony, are you holding? Are you holding?
I'm holding.
Offers a complete redesign of art and layout combined with high quality components to improve in-game usability. So take your collector's edition and throw it out, because
Is that a redesign of the collector's edition or a redesign of the old nonsense edition?
Whoa, we don't know, and we will never know, because this will be coming up at some point in the future, and I don't know. It's a thing.
I'm good. You know what? I'm good. I'm good. Sure? Whatever they do. Unless, you know, the thing is, give me a new expansion, whatever. I'll probably back it as long as I can just back that by itself. Because if I can't, I'm out. Because Stefan Feld, man, you got to get in on this. You seem like a good guy. Do some quality control on your publishers, man.
Yeah, I think if he can imagine him just like walking around and just seeing Castles of Burgundy, the special edition at the table and going, oh, dear God, what have I done?
What have I done? Yeah. I've unleashed upon the world.
I mean, maybe you have an opportunity now to buy all the little miniatures for the board so that it's miniatures now instead of tiles.
No, there I don't want that.
All right. Well, if that was not enough, Puerto Rico Special Edition 1897. One of the best board games is coming back in an amazing special edition. Awakened Realms. We just talked about them. And Ravensburger are teaming up together to craft a refined experience that will elevate Puerto Rico. We've talked about this before. Our friend Jason had a hand in this, of bringing Puerto Rico up to, I don't know, Anthony, how would you define it? Modern sensibilities and ethical...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The old game took place in a time when there was slavery on the island. It was very clear that they were representing slavery with the workers. They modernized the game to the point where slavery had been abolished, so the workers actually represented workers and people who lived on that island.
Yeah, there you go.
And so the mechanics were all the same in the 1897 edition. It was just at a time that was in tune and in line with modern sensibilities of, these are people with agency doing work on their own property.
So, yes.
It was a relatively simple change, but a very important change, and it made a significant difference in how the game is perceived.
So, 100%, there was some production issues with the first run of this version that was...
Lots. Yeah. Several, yeah.
So, it's great to see that they're going to get a really high-quality edition, and I'm assuming iron out all those problems with their previous production, and maybe some tweaks, maybe an expansion. There's no definitive information here. The campaign itself is showing more examples of the special edition for Castles of Burgundy. So mm-hmm. just giving you an idea that, like, hey, the production's going to be really good, and here is the design for the ship, which plays a very big part in the game. So, yeah, that's the thing that's coming out, too. Finally, I want to tell you yet another game found. Remember when we used to talk about Kickstarter? Do you remember those days? Remember when that was a thing?
my acquisition disorder, I was actually surprised when I clicked on it. I was like, oh, it's on Kickstarter. That's cute. And I was like, oh, that's a bad sign for Kickstarter if that's my knee-jerk reaction.
Oh, man, so. when they lost CMON, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know they have other things, but their tabletop division is what was bringing in the cash. So
yeah.
Somebody slipped up there. Somebody. All right. Well, yet another Ultimate Edition, Collector's Edition, so forth and so on GameFound. This is Star Trek Ascendancy, The Final Frontier. It's the ultimate version of Star Trek Ascendancy. So make it so, Anthony. If you have not played Star Trek Ascendancy in the most basic way possible, that we could say, TI4, but with Star Trek. Does that seem to fit? That seems about right.
That is pretty much it, except... Yeah. When it launched, it was weird. You could only play with three players.
Yes.
And that was a big barrier. And then they released a bunch of expansions, a couple of which let you play with four players. And then some combinations of those expansions don't work together. So it's like TI4 if you need a spreadsheet to figure out who can play and how they can play.
Sure.
But mechanically, yes, TI4, but in Star Trek, which it was an amazing game. I love that game. I just wish it was easier to get to the table.
Yeah, I think you can play with all the races now. the Borg are their own thing. Right. The Dominion has some special play conditions. But this version includes every expansion. So,
yes,
as a big Star Trek fan, super happy. Gale Force 9 does a very good job with their production. A little, you know, like as Anthony said, a little issues here and there as far as the gameplay is concerned. But this is an investment in time that really does pay out if you are a big Star Trek fan. If you're not, you'll probably like it a lot. But again, like there is probably more refined systems out there. So you do get every expansion, which is awesome. So that's a lot of fun. And then that coming out with this as well is going to be a new faction, a new race, new alternate ships. Their ship models are very good. And new planets, civilizations, tech cards, and other kind of stuff. Because again, it's a new edition. Also, there's going to be a custom storage solution. I don't know if this means that everything is going to fit in one box. It might be the biggest box that we've ever seen.
Yeah, the base box is already borderline a coffin box. So,
100%. So we'll get more information about this when it comes out. I'm excited about this because I'm a big fan of Star Trek, a big fan of Gale Force 9 with their, like, they really go all out with their IPs in the sci-fi universe. They do Doctor Who, they do Firefly and other kind of fun stuff out there. So I'm excited and interested to see what they have and what they'll do with this and see if it does get a super high quality production. So fingers crossed, if you haven't played it or seen it, you will get to see it pretty soon. This is going to be, at least their campaign's going to run late 2024. So it's going to be a little bit, but we'll certainly get more information about this coming up. All right, so that's everything that's hitting our acquisition stories. Anthony, let's talk about the games that we actually did hit the table this week. We'll let everybody know if those games are a buy and they should run out and pick those games up. If those games are a play and they should sit down and enjoy them. Or if those games are a dodge and they should avoid them. Or in fact, those games are the dreaded burn and let's just say you had an awesome game at one point, but then it was produced really bad and you were really upset because it was so expensive and you couldn't get it to the table anyway because no one wanted to play it. So therefore, kindling, my friends, kindling.
Oh, man, that sounds specific.
I don't know what you're talking about, but sure.
All right. I'm going to talk about a game that I was actually decently excited about when it was announced. Rats of Wistar, or Wistar. I'm not really sure how you pronounce that. It is designed by Simone Luciani and Danilo Sabia. And we've talked about Luciani a lot on this podcast, but together with Sabia, they made Anunnaki, which is another big Kickstarter campaign that shipped not too long ago. I have a copy. I haven't got a chance to play it yet. Sabia also worked on Windake, which is a wonderful worker placement game that I really enjoyed. So I was excited about this because it's kind of like, you know, the Secret of Nim.
Yeah.
Type of thing. You have like these rats or have their own little colony and they're going into the house and exploring and bringing things back to their homes. It's a cool idea. And mechanically, there's a lot of cool ideas baked in here, right? Mm-hmm. There's a wheel that's a worker placement wheel where you're going to place, you have three workers, you place them each turn and the wheel will turn between rounds. There's five rounds. And you also have secondary workers that represent kind of the strength that you have when you take those actions. And these secondary workers will go in one of three quadrants, and each quadrant aligns with two of the wedges of the wheel. So if you went to, say, the dig action, and the dig action happened to be in the forest that round, then you would want to make sure you have some of your secondary workers in the forest to power up that action. The number of workers is how many times you get to do that thing. So if I had three workers over there in the forest, I would get to dig three times. If I had enough resources to dig three times, I could dig three times. So it's an efficiency engine, and I love that. Efficiency engines are fun. If you really kind of min-max it right, you can do a lot of really cool things in a limited amount of space. And because it's five rounds, you have three workers, it's 15 actions throughout the game, so you really need to be efficient to accomplish a lot. You have kind of the second half of the board is just like the house, like I mentioned, and you can move your one single meeple token through the house using the movement actions. And when you move through the house, you can open doors. And when you open a door, you get like special bonus on the back of the door. You can flip over these objective cards. You can recruit guests and bring them back to your home. You're meeting these rats and mice inside the house, and you're bringing, you're like, hey, come back to our house and have some tea, right? It's very cute. It's very fun. And so it's kind of this rotating mechanism where you need to dig space in your home so that you can move beds into that space and have space for guests to come in and complete different objectives that get these cubes off your board that give you these extra bonuses that make everything else more efficient, and then have the resources needed to build these inventions that then give you endgame scoring points and also kind of make everything else more efficient throughout the game. All of that sounded great on paper. And then in action, it's not, it doesn't quite align the way I thought it would or wanted it to, really. Because on one hand, you have the wheel, which is a cool idea, but because it's worker placement, because there's limitations on where things can go, and because you need those secondary workers out there, it's very easy to get stuck in a point where none of the available actions are actually going to benefit you directly. And because there's a limited number of actions in the game, that can be tough. And again, I love worker placement games that are tight and force you to make tough decisions. But in the case of this game, sometimes it's not a tough decision, it's just no decision, right? Multiple times, like, all right, well, I'll take the free action that anybody can do, because there's always that one free action, and it's fine, and I'll get this token, and I'll get like one resource, and that's fine. But that feels like a huge waste for one of my 15 actions in the game. Or, you know, hey, I'm working towards one of these main mission objectives. It requires me to get three of this symbol on the invention cards. They have not come out of the deck. There are no symbols out that I can draft from the tableau to build, and therefore I've wasted that effort, right? I'm not going to be able to get that accomplished. So it's like this system that has, it's cool and it's thematic and it kind of looks like it should work, but then the pieces just don't quite fully align with one another. And I don't know if it's like a lack of playtesting or just a lack of, I don't know, sometimes things just don't quite match up. The system itself is just not designed in a way that just works as well as it could. It's cute and it's fun and I really want to like it, but it's expensive because it's a Euro with a lot of pieces. It's not particularly heavy, and yet it takes a little bit of time to set up and learn. Like, played it with my kids and it was fine, but everybody was kind of bored because there's a lot of actions that just you're not doing as much as you could. And if you hit the efficiency engine perfectly, you do some cool stuff, right? Like, inventions can chain into each other and build off a cool like tableau, but because the inventions come out of a marketplace, a lot of the times the cards up there aren't very interesting and they're not very helpful. And you clear that at the end of every round, but there's only five rounds. And the guest tiles are all face down when you're exploring. So you don't really know what is out there. So you can't build your engine around those either. So it's a game with a cool idea. And if I think that if that engine building mechanism worked better, I think it would be a better game all around. Like, I really want to like it, but as it's built, Rats of Whistler is a dodge for me. It doesn't all come together. In no place does it come together the way it promises that it should. It's not even like you look at the game, you're like, oh, I can see why it doesn't work. Like, you look at it, I learn the rules, I'm like, oh, this is exciting, this will be fun. And then I played it a couple times and I'm like, it's just not coming together. Like, the too much relies on building out an engine that kind of allows you to do these various things. And if it's not even luck necessarily, but it's a little bit luck, right? It's And then that makes it more difficult for everybody else at the table. So I would love to see kind of the wheel mechanism for worker placement in a different setting. I think that's a cool idea. I want to see more of that. But I would like to see some better system for how you handle the cards. Maybe you have your own hand of cards and you can draw from the deck and kind of siphon those down and choose cards that fit your needs or draft them even. Because the market is not big enough and things don't flow together well.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see different objective cards. I would love things to be more face up throughout the game, so it's not just like, I gotta go to an explore and flip this card over. Oh, that's useless for me. Oh, cool, I wasted an action. So it's just such a waste of a cool idea and a theme on this game that's just kind of middling. So There you go. Rats of Wister. It's a dodge. It's a high dodge because I really want to like it. Yeah. I might hold on to it and play it a couple more times, but at the end of the day, it'll probably leave my collection pretty soon.
That's a shame. Really? Yeah. I mean, I was really intrigued. Like you said, the theme was interesting. The worker placement wheel was dynamic. I love that idea because it's something that we don't see or haven't seen previously. You know, I think probably like pulling people off in Zilkin is probably the closest thing that I can think of. I like having not played the game, but just going through the rule book or the information there. The one thing that kind of stuck out to me was the player count here, because if you can play this solo.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of games, like, this is my ongoing critique, like, just generally. Make a solo game or make a game with multiplayers. Because I think that there could have been a game here, right? Like, is it going to be a puzzle game, or is the interaction really a thing? Because is the interaction essential? The other players essential to the gameplay? Because, I mean...
Yeah. It's worker placement.
Yeah.
That is the interaction. Like, there were times when I wanted to take an action, like mm-hmm. to play an invention card, and all three spots on the wheel were taken.
100%.
So I could, yeah. So that round, I could not play a card, and that's part of the game, and that's fine. I'm not upset about that. The solo is fine. It's an automa. It blocks stuff.
Yeah.
It's whatever. I didn't like it very much, but I don't think I disliked it more than I disliked the game. It was just like, meh, this is fine.
I just worry when they design two types of games in one, and I feel like this should have been a lot heavier on the interactions thematically.
I agree. I think, especially in the house, moving through the house, there more needed to be done there. It's half the board, and it's very easy to get to the end of the house. And then you're like, you could pick up some cheese. I'm like, okay, cheese is worth 6 points, I guess. I don't know what the point of that is. I don't know. There's pieces here that just feel half baked. Like, the action wheel, fully baked. Put that in a different game. The house, completely half-baked.
Yeah.
Not sure what was going in there.
That's a shame. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got for us this week?
So really quickly, we'll talk about this more next week probably, because we both have it, is Quilts and Cats of Calico.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new app that is up on Steam.
Just launched
today, right? We got a chance to play it a little bit early, and it is a very nice, faithful adaptation of Calico.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another game called Calico, so that's why it's called Quilts and Cats of Calico. I looked it up. I'm like, why is this name so long? I'm like, oh, because there's another game in Steam literally just called Calico, and it's about cats. You can't just have another Calico game about cats. But it's cute. It's a really nice implementation. It has a story mode. It has challenges. You can play online with people. You can play by yourself with the AI. And it just has a nice tactile feel. So if you haven't played Calico, it's a game in which you have these tiles that you pull out and you place one tile per round. And it's kind of in the same vein of like Cascadia. It's same designers. And you're trying to match different patterns. And as you match those different patterns, you gain points. Some of those give you cats. Some give you little buttons because you're building a quilt.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about keeping multiple different patterns and combos in your head at the same time as you're pulling these tiles and placing them. It's a very spatial reasoning type of game that I love that type of game. It's abstract, it's fun, it's colorful, and this is a very good digital implementation of that.
All right. Very nice. Yeah, I'll get a chance to play it this coming week, so I will have my review, and we'll play together too as well. So
yeah.
Thanks for the review copies, because I know you're a big fan of Calico. You taught me the game, so I'm really looking forward to getting it to, I guess, the Steam, right? Not the tablet, the Steam, necessarily. Yeah. The yeah. Steam. You gotta get to the Steam, kids.
yeah. Wherever that happens to be.
All right. Well, I got two little small games for you that I think are just fun to talk about this week. First up is Surf. Asaurus. Yes, my friend, Surfasaurus Max. This came out last year, and it's all about putting together really cool combos of cards out on the table that are actually dinosaurs on surfboards. So the title is actually the game. It's a small deck of cards, and the first player marker is a surfboard. And because, you know, you're going to, you know, well, actually, the first player marker is a dinosaur. You have a surfboard. And when you put the dinosaur on the surfboard, that, you know, you're the first player kind of thing. The game itself is an interesting idea. So basically, on your turn, you are just going to play a card and then pick up a card. Now, but depending on the number of players that are playing the game, once the right numbers of cards are reached, the strongest possible combination of cards, you're basically going to be playing two cards out there. So if it's four players, eight cards out there. The strongest combination of cards allows those particular players who played those cards to win that round, and then they're able to score their specific cards. So what that comes down to is you are going to have, you're basically going to try to make poker hands, and you're going to have numbers between 1 and 12, and you're going to get them randomized to you, and they're going to be in seven different suits. So making poker hands, if you're not familiar with poker, high card is typically the basics, you know, whoever has the highest card win, a straight, four or five consecutive cards of different suits, a flush, four or five cards of the same suit, four or five of a kind, and I'll explain the five of the kind in a second, where it's the same number but in different suits, or a straight flush, which is the top, which is a straight with four or five consecutive cards in one suit. So when someone plays a card out, you're going to play a card, hopefully, that is going to align with that other card in a powerful way. So let's say they put out a five. Let's just call it a five of spades to make this a little, or five of T-Rexes, five T-Rex. You want to put out a six T-Rex because on the lower end, the 4-3-2-1 might get knocked out if 5-6-7-8-9 comes out, right? So you always want to be able to be on the higher end. But here's the trick. The higher end scores the least amount of points. Because when you do score your cards, you are going to score your cards based upon the scoring on that particular card. So if you're able to put, let's say, a 1, 2, or 3, you're going to score the most points possible out of those cards. The higher end, easier, safer to win, but scores you less points. Now, beyond the typical four of a kind or how many cards in a straight or a flush, if it goes beyond that and it can't be separated because there are identical numbers in play, then those players who played those cards are going to get half points. So basically, the way the game kind of looks at it, it's either a whole coconut of points or a half coconut of points. It's a very quick playing game. It might be going for a flush initially, and then it sweeps over, and it looks like, four of a kind is now coming out. So there's a little quick interaction. There is obviously trying to get ahead of your opponents, trying to anticipate what they're going to play, but also being somewhat hindered by the hand of cards that you have and the stuff that you draw. Surfosaurus Max. Gets a play for me. It's a strong play for a very simple kind of card game that's a little bit wacky. The artwork is very cartoony and wacky, very colorful. But it's something that is a really great little filler.
Great. Sounds good. I remember seeing people playing this at PAX and thinking it was interesting.
Yeah, it's just colorful fun. I think if you, again, a game with a just good table presence because of just like the crazy kind of fun nature of it. Another filler game that I got a chance to play is My Shelfie from 2002. This is another little small game with really excellent table presence. So like when I heard this game was coming out, My Shelfie, of course, I'm thinking about My Shelfie with all my tabletop games. So I was excited to sit down and play with My Shelfie, which actually turns out to be a plastic little shelfie. Every player gets one of these that you're going to fill in the squares. I'm like, great. Can't wait to see all the board games I could slot in here. There's no board games to slot in there. Now, again, depending on how you look at it, right, there is again, some tiles that are board game-esque, you know, legally distinct as far as what they may be, but primarily the tiles out there are pictures and trophies and cats and books, plants, stuff that typically goes in a shelfie. It's only people like us who are crazy who fill our shelfies with tabletop games. So, how do you play this little filler? Well, basically, you get your little plastic shelfie that stands up, you know, high, and it's brown and such, and it's got the squares. And then there's a living room board where all the tiles are kind of randomly placed on this living room board. And depending on the number of players, there'll be a certain number of tiles out there on the board. Pretty simple, right? You will have the opportunity then to pick 1 to 3 objects or small square tiles on the board as long as they are free, by meaning that they have a open side, which allows you to take a particular line. You can't take some odd shape like one high, one low, one medium. They have to be in the same kind of plane. You take those 3 tiles, you have a choice to kind of line them up any way you want, and then you drop them all in the same column. You can't separate them. Why are you doing this? Well, because you have private goals that need certain color tiles in certain locations, basically one color per area, and you'll score a number of points based upon that. In addition to that, there is global public goals that you can score throughout the game. And typically, these are identical tiles based upon the color or the type, and you have to have them in a certain configuration, and you'll score points. The more people who score that public goal, the point scoring for that public goal goes down and down and down and down. So you can go for the public goals, score a lot of points. You can go for the private goals. Obviously, you want to go for a little bit of everything. Once the living room kind of runs out and basically someone fills up their shelfie, the game comes to the end. So this is a very light family weight, nice table presence. Think like Azul, but much, much lighter than Azul. There's nothing too complicated. I really enjoyed the 3D little shelfie, you know, mechanism where you could drop the tiles in. It had a really nice, satisfying drop, kind of like a Connect Four. But basically, you were really kind of just very abstractly trying to match what the public goals happen to be or what your private goal happens to be. It's a light game. It's fun, but it's somewhat samey. After playing it a couple of times, you can also play it on Board Game Arena, which is great. So if you haven't played it, please play it on Board Game Arena, or, you know, get a chance to pick it up. I give it a light play. I do wish there was something more dynamic to the game. It's just really the luck of what's available and trying to hit certain particular goals. It's fine. It's fine. There's nothing broken. There's nothing bad about it. It's a filler with great table presence, really nice artwork. I don't know why it wasn't all board game based. It should have been board game based. I would have picked it up just for that and just to like put it on a shelf somewhere. So that is my shelfie. Get to play for me.
That's cool. Yeah, it looked like it would be kind of light and simple, but it's cool that it's worthy of a play.
Yeah, and they're going to actually have a My Shelfie the Dice game coming out this year. So it's going to be a roll and write. So if I don't know why you would do that, because you want the shelfie, right? The only reason to play the game is because it has that 3-dimensional plastic shelf. So. But, you know, to each his own. All right, so that's everything that hit our table this week. Anthony, lead us through our feature review, which is this week, Better Than the Board Game. These are the games that are better than the original board game in which they come from. Anthony, you have a couple of these games.
I do. Yeah, so we're going to talk about games that, you know, are taking the original formula and remixing it in a new format. So the card game, the dice game, the whatever, right? Mostly card and dice games.
Sure.
But which ones are actually better? Because there's a lot of these. Sure. And often they're based on popular, high-performing games, and they're not quite as good. It might be good, but not quite as good. So which ones are actually better or close to better? We're going to give you a few.
Yeah, we did a bunch of episodes back, a while back, we did an episode where, like, which is the best version, right? So if you take, like, Ticket to Ride, what's the best version of Ticket to Ride? Well, these are the best versions of the game, arguably. They just happen to be a card, dice, or other version of it, which is radical and just amazing that they were able to do that. And they're here, nonetheless.
Yeah. All right. So let's dive in. We'll start off with there's a couple here that we've talked about a lot. This is the one that's on both of our top 100 lists, so it kind of jumps to the top of the list. It's Castles of Burgundy, the card game. So this one launched almost 10 years ago now. Like, it was 8 years ago or so. And it is a small box card game version of Castles of Burgundy. It takes up a lot of table space, but it obviously packs down much smaller. A little bit quicker. It's a little bit simpler. It is gives you the feel and fun of a Castles of Burgundy, but there are no dice. It's all card-based. Everything's on a card. It's a wonderful implementation. It's very clever. And it is arguably better than the base game.
Yeah, it's really hard to say because, again, Castle of Burgundy has so many iterations and obviously now Super Deluxe Collector's Edition. But this was the game that really just blew me away. And I didn't think I was going to see a tiny little card game be as compelling as the board game itself. I mean, the dice are actually on the cards. And you can actually get to this table reliably time and time again because people know Castles of Burgundy. This plays quicker, faster, more streamlined. And in a lot of ways, I enjoy it more sometimes. I gotta admit, sometimes I'm just like, this is really satisfying. Whereas sometimes on the other one, not so much. The dice is a little more harsh in the board game. So yeah, Castles of Burgundy, the card game. An excellent little game.
Absolutely. Next up, we have Terraforming Mars Ares Expedition. This is the first spin-off of Terraforming Mars. Also colloquially known as the card game, except Terraforming Mars already is a card game. So we're just removing the map, the board element. We're making it smaller. It's Race for the Galaxy, but Terraforming Mars.
It is.
This is one that I like a lot. I don't rate it quite as highly as you, but I know you've said repeatedly this is better for you than the board game.
Yeah, it's superior for me. Like, this is the quintessential Terraforming Mars, the kind of game experience for a lot of reasons. As you mentioned, the board is smaller, so that dynamic has certainly changed. But the production versus the first edition is so much better. The artwork is so much better. I think we talked about this ever so recently. You could pick it up in Target for a very reasonable price, and that was kind of a thing too. Also, it gets rid of a lot of the fiddliness that comes with the board game itself. And it has those great Race for the Galaxy mechanisms that you can get to the table are easily understandable. Typically a lot of fun to get out there. So a better table presence as far as like everything's beautiful, everything's nice, everything's neat. There's no take that cards. Which in Terraforming Mars, I just don't enjoy. Like, you're building things. Like, it's just not fun to now, oh, you lost all your plants. So how was that? Like, I don't know. Wasn't good. So yeah, I enjoyed it a great deal. If you have not played it and do love Terraforming Mars, please get a chance to play it because it is my favorite way to play Terraforming Mars.
All right. Next up, we have Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. So I know a lot of people out there, the Gloomhaven lifers are like, wait, what? No, this isn't better than Gloomhaven. It's a prequel and it's shorter and it has less stuff. But let me make this argument. Gloomhaven is a lot.
It is.
Right. Gloomhaven is a man who had unlimited time and resources to build the game however he wanted. Right. And it's a masterpiece. But also a big sprawling mess of a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Which means the vast majority of us are never going to finish it. It's overwhelming. It takes too much time to set up. It takes up too much space. Jaws of the Lion, because it's designed for big box stores, needed to be smaller, quicker, and easier to learn. And as a result, it is a better game experience for most people, right? It's standalone. You don't need the other stuff. it's a prequel, so it doesn't matter what happens in the other game. There's just the four characters. You have just the 25 scenarios, which is a lot for most people. You got rid of the board. It's in the book itself, and the rules have been streamlined. So everything about this is designed to be quicker and easier and more accessible. And it is all those things. So I would recommend literally anybody, if you've never played a Gloomhaven game, you start here. This is the best version of that. And then everything else is like the king-sized jumbo version of that. Like, oh, you love Jaws of the Lion? Well, guess what? There are 250 more scenarios if you want to go buy the big bucks that goes with it. But this is the most distilled, best version. And from a creative perspective, I think my opinion has always been people do their best work when they have restrictions. And this shows that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think its massive production and success with all the stuff that it has and can provide has been to its detriment a lot. The setup time and the breakdown time are enormous. And because the game is a lot of just grinding your way through, you feel that. And I think that's terribly unfortunate because, again, genius design, you know, streamlined, concise, and so much more affordable. I think you get so much more out of the game. Again, this is another big box store like we were talking about last week game that you can pick up and just get to the table. And it doesn't break the bank, and it's not going to take up a closet full of stuff. And again, if you do like, you know, Gloomhaven, you can find it here as well. And I think, again, as you mentioned, Anthony, I think there's the challenge here is, unless you play everything, or you play all the missions, or you get to play all the characters, Jaws of the Lion is always going to be better because you get to do all of that. You get to play all the characters, you get to play all the missions, you get to do all that thing and have a conclusion. And I think for the vast majority of people out there, no one's playing all of Gloomhaven with all of its stuff, or Frosthaven with all of its stuff. So keep doing this. I like this. This is awesome.
All right, next up we have Seven Wonders Duel. So obviously it's a card game out of the box. This is not different mechanically at a base level. It's just a two-player version of Seven Wonders, which creates an ingenious approach to drafting where there's a lot of strategy involved in which card do you draft, when do you draft it, do you take a card out of rotation that even you can't use to either build your wonder or turn into gold, how do you manage this tableau that you're sharing between you and your opponent. There are multiple ways to win the game through either science or military or points at the end. And that's just the base game. Mm-hmm. There are two expansions to this as well that kind of build out on that with Agora and Pantheon. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite way to play Seven Wonders. I know not everybody, so a lot of people prefer the full version of the game, but I feel like this is a perfect distillation of everything that makes the game so genius.
Yeah, Seven Wonders has always been one of my favorite games of all time. Seven Wonders Duel has been right there since, you know, it came out, because the two-player version of Seven Wonders was never really a thing. This is a thing. And as you said, it's a pure distillation of Seven Wonders, but I think in some ways it is better. So the military is not just, I scored a couple more points, you lost a couple of points. It is a back and forth. It's a tug of war for victory, and you can lean into that or not, but you have to pay attention to it. When you play Seven Wonders, you know, the big board game, you don't have to. You just lose the points, or you just go all in, you win the points. But it doesn't win or lose you the game necessarily. This can. And the same thing with the science. It's great to get the science. If you get to run away with the science in Seven Wonders, awesome. You got a lot of points. Doesn't mean you'll win. But here, you could win or lose if somebody gets all of the science tokens. And again, two great expansions that really open up the game a lot. You can also play this online, which is a lot of fun, very quick to play. So certainly can be seen, and in some ways is better than the original.
Absolutely. All right. Next up, we have a pair of games from Fantasy Flight Games that iterate on other games from Fantasy Flight Games. So it's the thing they'd like to do. First up, Arkham Horror, the card game. Originally released in 2016 with the revised edition, which is the one you can buy now, that came out in 2021. is a card game version of Arkham Horror,
yeah,
which is a board game dating back to 2005.
Wow.
So almost 20 years old now, which is crazy. This is better than that board game in almost every conceivable way. Like, it is faster. There is not as much setup time. It has a built-in narrative to it. You can play it solo or cooperatively with two or as a group. There are multiple different scenarios and storylines that you can work through. You don't have to go through all of it. And at this point, with 8 years worth of content, you could play this game. It is a lifestyle game. You could play this game for months or years and be finding new things that are interesting. And the thing about this is that it takes Nate French's original Lord of the Rings formula for an LCG from Lord of the Rings, and it turns it into a narrative structure where you go through all of this, you solve these different mysteries, or you don't, you go mad, or you don't, and then at the end of it, there are branching paths that will determine what you do next. And the game accounts for all of that, and it comes with a lot of new clever ways to engage you in the story based on that. The board game is a board game. It has a lot of interesting, cool ideas, but it is static in that sense, whereas this is about as dynamic of a game as you can get. So much better than the board game. Arkham Horror, the card game.
Yeah, same here. I've dabbled in the LCGs. I've liked the LCGs. I've never been a Cthulhu person whatsoever. And this LCG is so compelling. Getting and playing this at the table and then finishing a particular mission and then getting the story elements and going, oh no, dear God, this is getting worse. Like, this, it really had that dramatic appeal. You really felt like the character you were playing. The characters felt different. I mean, it's just, it's a fantastic game.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then that leads us to our other one, which is a Game of Thrones, the card game, which takes the original kind of sprawling diplomatic at your throat formula from Game of Thrones, the board game, which dates back to 2003. And it gives us a powerful structure of a card game, right? It is a competitive game. It plays two or four. Originally designed by Nate French and Eric Lang with Christian Peterson. So like this trio of brilliant game designers. And it was redesigned back in, I think, 2014 or 2015. So with the second edition, and it just makes it that much stronger. It's based on the books. It's not based on the show, although there is a version that was based on the show. So the artwork is, you know, kind of the original drawings and kind of implementations and drawing from what had been written by George R. R. Martin up through the fourth, fifth books of the series. It's just a really solid, generally 1v1, but I've had a lot of really good experiences playing this with four people.
Yeah, I think so too. Again, this is another LCG that really just was so fun. Like, I know it's dumb to say that, but like, it's fun. It's dynamic. It's strategic. Like, you really feel like you're making serious political or strategic military kind of plays. And it's so great to see the game completely fleshed out. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Here's a cheeky one for you.
Oh, boy.
Monopoly Deal.
Oh, come on. Really? Huh? Really?
Yeah.
It's better?
So it's so much better.
It's a good Monopoly game? We're not, dude, we signed contracts. We're not allowed to say that on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, if we're talking about, like, scale from the quality of the board game to the quality of its implementation.
I'll get you.
This is probably the best improvement of any of these.
Because people were about to downvote this podcast out of existence, but I'm glad you clarified that.
No, it's got, like, a legit, like, 6.5 on Board Game Geek.
Nice.
Like, for a Monopoly game. The original Monopoly does not have a 6.5 on Board Game Geek. It's like 4 or something. So it's a card game, right? It's quick. It takes, I think, 15 to 20 minutes to play. You have the properties that come out. It's fast paced. You're just trying to collect a few sets and that's it. And there's action cards and property cards that kind of help you get there. That's it. It's a take that style set collection card game. It's clever. And whoever designed this found a way to make Monopoly interesting, which, who knew that was possible? It happened, though.
Yeah, no, I have played Monopoly in the past. I'm admitting it. Not recently, not in the last decade, but yes, it has happened. I'm sorry to say. So I am glad that there is a better version than Monopoly. So like this can kill Monopoly now, which is awesome.
Yes.
Yes. Done.
I mean, it won't because Monopoly is.
Oh, come on. We were this close, man.
It can't die, man. It can't die.
Capitalism!
That game is almost 100 years old. It ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, well.
All right. Next up, Bang the Dice Game. Is it better than the original Bang? Yes. So the thing about this, I say that with some caveats because it's so random. It's so chaotic. But I think that's what makes Bang interesting.
Yes, in the game. 100%.
The original with the cards, it's almost not chaotic enough. Right. Whereas the dice, it's basically Yahtzee, but with, you know, it's like Martian dice, but with shooting each other and dynamite. And this came out 11 years after the original game. So a lot of things have been iterated and changed and improved upon. Lots of different variability in terms of who can be in the game as well, which I think adds a lot to it. It's a party game through and through, but it is the better version of that party game.
I think that's, like you said, the quintessential essence of the game is that chaoticness. You don't know who's who. You're throwing shots out there. You're throwing dynamite out there. You're healing, hopefully, and not getting knocked out, but people get knocked out, and that's one of those games. So, yeah, the more chaos, the better. I think it fits the theme perfectly.
Yes. All right. We have next up Long Shot the Dice Game. This is a dice game version re-implementing Long Shot, which originally came out in 2009. And it was a horse racing game from Z-Man. You have the horses on the board. You're playing out these different cards. You're trying to win your bets. It's exactly what it sounds like. The dice game changes the artwork, makes it a little goofier, removes all those little plastic horses and replaces them with like these kind of octagonal meeples, shortens the board a lot and makes it a dice game, which fits the theme so much better. Because A, it's more luck-based. B, it's faster. It's so much faster. And C, everybody can kind of mark and write as you go. So you get this quick, fast betting-style game, which most horse racing games end up being. They're betting games. And the mechanics fit the theme of the game in a way that the original didn't really pull off. So, again, kind of in that party sphere, but you cut the game in half or more, like 20, 25 minutes now. And it really fits the theme so much better. So the dice version is the way it should have always been.
100% agree. It's a lot more fitting of the party theme. It's more cartoony. The artwork's great. I don't mind the markers here. And it plays so much better. I'm sad that there was actually a board game version of this.
Right. all right. And then the last one here on our list of the games that are better than the board game, we have Fleet the Dice Game. The original Fleet came out in 2012 from Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle, and it was a auction-style hand management game about going out and fishing, right? It's a fishing game. Fleet the Dice Game is also a fishing game, but it takes the core mechanisms of that original board game, it turns it into a roll-and-write across two different sheets where you have kind of your fishing mechanic and then going back to town and interacting with the town mechanic. And it is the heaviest roll and write that I think still pulls off the base mechanics that I talked about earlier on the podcast of giving you something interesting to do that is not overwhelming and yet has a lot of divergence from what everybody else is doing. So in the end, you then still get a 45-minute game. It's a little meaty. It's not too long. There's a lot of interesting decisions to be made. Every game you play is very different, and the dice themselves do not immediately dictate everything you can do. It's one of the best roll and writes, period, and it's based on this original board game. Same designers, too, which I think is fantastic. So, Fleet the Dice Game is, and they've made several different versions of that formula going forward. There's a second edition that came out. There's several others that are kind of similar, like one's based on, like, making cars. There's one based on farming, same designers. But Fleet the Dice Game is still, in my opinion, the best all around implementation of a thinkier roll and write game.
But that's not all, Anthony. We also have very good games, but not necessarily better than the board games.
Yeah, we had to throw this category in there because there's War of the Ring, the card game.
Yes.
Which is brilliant, was our game of the year like a couple years ago. is already, it's in my top 50 now, but it's not better than War of the Ring, because War of the Ring is one of the best games ever made, and the card game, while brilliant, it's not better than War of the Ring. Come on. It's not better. It's not. I fight the all day, man. We'll have a whole podcast series on why that's not good.
Okay. Okay, Monopoly guy, whatever you say.
It's shorter.
It is.
It's shorter than War of the Ring.
Yeah. It's got more players than War of the Ring.
Yes.
See, we
yes.
see we can make a list up. We have things we can say.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It requires those players, which makes it less playable than War of the Ring.
But it's got a solo mode.
Sure. That is true. It does have solo mode. Requires an expansion, though.
Well, I mean, there's like 20 expansions for War of the Ring, too, these days.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, three of them, none of which you'll ever play, because it's such a complex game that you're never going to get all that stuff in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a brilliant game, though. Like, if War of the Ring's a 10 for me, this is a 9.5. So, like, sure. It's all variable.
Yeah, now it's... Let's not get into a thing. Let's just, we're running out of time on the app. I don't want to make it a thing, but we could discuss it. Again, like you said, it's right there for me. I don't, if War of the Ring is a 10, this is a 9.9. I mean, I think I think with War of the Ring, you do get that. I mean, you do get that movie thematic book feel. And both of them allow you to feel like you're playing that story out, but adding different elements to it to change the fate of certain characters and things. So it's just so good. And again, it's so good. You don't even have to like Lord of the Rings to like it. It helps, but like some games are required to like that thing. Like if you're going to play Star Trek Ascendancy, you need to like Star Trek. Like, sure.
Yeah.
You could like not, but also you really need to. Like, again, it leans into the IP really hard. You can't disconnect it to. Here, the mechanics of both these games are phenomenal. Like, good job.
Yeah. I can't argue with any of that. Nope. All right. Next up, not quite as close, I would argue, Nations the Dice Game. I think the original game for this, the big box, is demonstrably better in many ways. But this is quicker and cheaper and more accessible, and a lot easier to teach.
Yes.
So it has a lot. I've played this one more times with other people, whereas I've played the original game by myself more often. The randomness of this game and kind of the anticlimactic end of it makes it less interesting as a game, but it is much more accessible to play.
And I think that's what's essential here, because I think Nations, as far as a board game's concerned, really good game. But as you mentioned, Anthony, because of reasons and because there are other games in that kind of genre, you know, it's in the shadow of a lot of other Civilization games. The dice game is its own thing, and like it owns that space, and that's pretty amazing. I think it really, like, it's wonderful that they were able to do that.
Yeah, not a lot of good Civilization dice building games. Yeah, that's all right. And then last but not least, we have Istanbul, the dice game, which is a dice-based re-implementation of Istanbul, which I've honestly never really liked Istanbul very much. Mm-hmm. I thought it to be kind of bland and repetitive, whereas the dice game I always found very interesting because of the progressive nature of the way you roll the dice and how you use
them. Yeah.
You really have to think about how you're using those different mechanics as you build up, and getting those gems is more of a complex puzzle than it seems like it will be. So I really enjoy the dice game. I still think the board game, especially with the expansions mixed in, is a better all-around package, but they're very close.
I'll say that Istanbul, the dice game, is better. I just think, like you mentioned, like there's an argument to be made, of course, about the board and having those tiles that you can kind of rearrange to make that particular board, so you have different situations. But also at the same time, it's a lot of blocking. It's a lot of like, how many steps can I get to transfer this into that? And I think the dice game cuts out of all of that very banal kind of like, walk to here to do this, walk to here to do that. Like, I have to take actions to do something fun. The dice game just gives me the fun.
Right.
And you know, I think it just plays better for that. Like, it gets to the point.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all. Yeah, I would rather play this if you ask me which one.
Sure. Well, all right, everyone. So those are the games that are better than the board games out there. So we hope that you enjoy this list. If you have not played them, please do. They're so much fun and so great to get to the table. Typically a lot shorter, a lot faster, a lot more streamlined, condensed, you know, but still keeps the quintessential nature of the board game. All great stuff. Please do check them out. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.